You're listening to the Imperfect PCOS podcast, where we share no BS, science-backed strategies to put your PCOS into remission. I'm your host, Corey Ruth, aka the Women's Dietitian. Let's get into it. Hello, hello. Welcome back to the Imperfect PCOS podcast. Today, we are joined by Dr. Carrie Jones. She is an internationally recognized speaker, consultant, and educator on the topic of women's health and hormones with over 20 years in the industry. Dubbed the Queen of Hormones, Dr. Jones is a naturopathic physician who did her two-year residency focused on women's health and endocrinology. She went on to get her Master of Public Health and was one of the first to become board certified through the American Board of Naturopathic Endocrinology. She was the first medical director for the Dutch Test, Precision Analytical, and the first head of medical education at Rupa Health. She co-hosts the highly popular show, The Root Cause Medicine Podcast, check that one out, that has over 3 million downloads. She's a clinical expert for the Lifestyle Matrix Resource Center and was on Under Armour's Human Performance Council. Currently, she's the chief medical officer at New Ethics Formulations and head of medical education at Metabolic Mentor University. I didn't butcher any of those words, so perfect. Yeah, woo, snaps for Corey. Welcome, Dr. Jones. So happy to have you on today.
Thank you so much for inviting me on. Yeah, you did amazing. That was a perfect intro, 10 out of 10.
Nailed it. Yes, love to hear it. Oh my gosh, awesome. Well, it's funny, when I first got hopped onto social media, when was that? About 2017, maybe 2018. I remember following your page and just being able to learn so much from you. And so I just feel like this is such an honor to be able to talk with you today and for you to be able to share some of those same nuggets of wisdom with my listeners today. I'm just so appreciative.
Oh, well, definitely this area in women's health is, as you know, because I watch you talk about it all the time, just from different angle. Yes. We're just largely forgotten in a lot of these conversations, which is really unfortunate. And so anything I can do to help get information out there about how our bodies work, what's going on hormones, I'm here for it.
Yes, I love it. All right. Well, then this will be such a great conversation. So first tell us, I'd love to know kind of your personal history, how you got into your story, how you got into this space. You have so many impressive, you know, credentials and experiences under your belt. What kind of led you to pursuing this path?
It's funny, actually. So I was raised in Lexington, Kentucky, and my like wellness class, sex ed class, whatever you want to call it, was taught by the high school football coach. So you can imagine how that was.
Ours was too.
Yeah, really? Oh my gosh. Yes. And so horrifying is a great word. And he had three daughters. And so he would talk about or make fun of his daughters and what they were going through. And I remember sitting there thinking, because it was in the cafeteria, and I remember thinking, this is what I'm learning? Like, this is what I'm getting out of this? And I knew I wanted to be a doctor. I was preparing to either become go pediatrics, yeah, or OBGYN. I really thought I wanted to be in the baby kid space. And then I realized quite selfishly, mm-hmm, how much time and effort that took. God bless our pediatricians and OBGYNs. Oh, yeah. But I decided the conventional medical route wasn't the route for me. I was volunteering in two hospitals in college.
Yes.
And while I love the experience and I have a lot of regard for them, it was just very sterile, obviously surgery medications. And I thought, no, I'm such an educator. I really want to help people at a grassroots level. I really want to get an education. So I moved from the Midwest out to the Pacific Northwest, complete change, found a naturopathic medicine. Where in the Midwest?
Where did you move to?
So Portland, Oregon.
Oh, cool. I'm in Oregon.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Okay. So I moved to Portland, Oregon, and found naturopathic medicine, which was amazing, and went that route. And once I got into hormones and all things hormones, I just kept with it because I realized how many of my friends and my patients were like, I have no idea what's going on with my body, and nobody's ever taught this to me. So it became a thing.
Totally. I'm going to pause for 1 second.
Dr. Yeah, my camera, like,
there we go. Okay. Okay. Back at it.
I was like, hold on. See, I'm telling you, this camera today, she is ready for Christmas. She's not having it.
My God. What was I gonna say? Oh yeah. So back into it. I just wish that you could go back to that
a cafeteria and reteach that class with everything that you know now, because what a world of difference.
So many, I mean, you hear it all the time. We see it in the DMs and social media. We see it you know, the comments of women who are just like, nobody told me, I didn't know. I was told it was normal. I was told it was common. I was told it's fine. And then here's this medication. And I thought, oh my goodness. If we just were taught some basics around hormones, I feel like women in everything we go through would be alleviated a significant percent. If we already knew, oh, I understand what's going on in my body. Oh, I understand how I'm screwing it up. Oh, I understand how to fix this. Oh, I understand what I need to be doing in my life, lifestyle, stress management, stress, diet, what have you, and how I've maybe gone off the rails and need to right the ship. And instead we go to the doctor, our healthcare, primary care, and they say, oh, either that's normal, everything's normal, you're fine, or, you know, here, take this pill, and we're left to flounder again.
Yes, it's so true. And I love that we have naturopathic doctors for that reason, because they really can be this, you know, beautiful harmony of conventional, you know, Western, whatever you want to call it, medicine, and all the other things, all the alternatives that, you know, we're able to explore that we just never learn about, especially when we're in school, or even, you know, as we get older. Like, how many girlfriends I talk to now who have children who don't know what ovulation is wild to me. It's just so wild. You have really, your education now, and your, you know, what you're educating on now, and your social media pages, which is primarily, you know, where I learned about you and how I kind of follow and keep up with you, is really shifted, you know, into this perimenopause space. And I love it. I am so here for it. I really want to talk about that today more, because just like everything else in women's health, it really kind of lives in the shadows, and we don't talk enough about it. And there's so much misinformation. I'm just really, really excited to dive into that topic in particular. Could you clarify for listeners, what is the difference between perimenopause and menopause? And let's just start there.
I will start with menopause, actually. So menopause, the classic definition of menopause is once you have gone 12 consecutive months with no period and you're of an age, then on the 13th month, you're considered menopausal. Well, technically, you're considered postmenopausal because you're in menopause during those 12 months.
Right.
So if somebody's listening to this and they're 45 or 49 or 52, and they go, oh my gosh, that's me. I just had my 12th month. No period, then they're considered menopausal. Okay. Now, the space before that, that can last 5 to 10 years, depending on the woman, is called perimenopause. So what I relate it to is puberty, but reverse puberty. You're backing out of puberty. So in puberty, when you were a teenager, you had what we call coupling. So basically, imagine like a big electrical box, and the person in, like in a movie, and the person comes in and is switching all the things on and lifts the big arm up, and all the electricity goes through. Nice. That's what happens in puberty. You get a coupling in your brain to get online all your reproductive signals, systems, hormones, etc.
Yeah.
You go into perimenopause, which can start about late 30s into the 40s.
Right.
It's the opposite. It's an uncoupling. So now those breaker switches are starting to get turned off one by one. And eventually the arm gets pulled down and you are considered menopausal. Mm-hmm. Now, the tough part is in perimenopause, which doesn't get talked about a lot, is that things can feel very chaotic and go haywire. Whereas maybe in our cycling years, maybe you had regular, consistent periods. Everything was kind of regular, consistent. You knew what was coming.
Right.
And then all of a sudden perimenopause hits. And I have so many women, myself included, that are like, what is happening? I didn't change anything and everything changed. My periods are changing. My body is changing. My thinking process is changing. My energy is changing. My skin is changing. My joy, like, the line goes on and on and on. All the systems get affected. And that is perimenopause because of this uncoupling through the body until you get into full-on menopause. And it's a super big disservice that women don't know about this. I've had more women, more professional women say to me, I'm Carrie, I'm 45 or I'm 49 or I'm 51. And I didn't know. Nobody told me. I just thought I was going crazy. I just thought it was stress. I thought it was because I had two teenagers. I thought it was because, you know, I'm running a company. I just thought I didn't know. And I'm like, why don't we know? Why aren't we talking about this?
Ah, yes. Thank you. So true. I feel like all I've ever heard was, you know, it lasts a couple years and you might have, you know, you get hot flashes or night sweats, you know, the hot flashes, but nothing else. Yes. And yeah. You think about how many things hormones impact when it comes to our health. I could totally see all of that just going into like chaos mode when those switches start to turn off. Yes. So what are some signs and symptoms to look out for? We talked about periods, but if someone's starting to think, am I drifting into perimenopause? Is this something that I need to explore? Maybe go to the doctor, get some lab work done. You know, what are some things to look for?
The answer is yes, because as you move into perimenopause or you're in the thick of perimenopause, everything can change. And so you might just feel, oh my gosh, it must be stress. Corey, it must be stress. It must just be because whatever it is, kids, family, life, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Not realizing it's your actual stage in life. So the common symptoms we often think about, what you said, hot flashes, night sweats, changing cycles. Usually they get shorter. So you'll go from 28 days to 26 days. Then you're a 24-day girl. Then you're a 22-day girl. Or you go the opposite. You start skipping. So you'll skip for the first time ever. And then you panic. You're like, holy crap, am I pregnant?
Yeah.
Like, hold on. No, I'm in my 40s. Am I pregnant? Yeah. Or hold on. Okay. And then it'll come back. And then you'll skip again. And then you'll skip a couple. And then it will come back. And so you kind of do this vacillation back and forth. Okay. Now, other super common symptoms in the beginning, can't sleep. I can't tell you the number of patients I had when I was seeing patients full time and I was younger, and they'd go, you wait till your 45th birthday, you won't be able to sleep. And I was like, that's ridiculous. Yeah. Oh yeah, it's real.
check.
It can happen. Can't fall asleep. Can't stay asleep. Mood changes because of the change in hormones. Hormones play such a huge role. Your estradiol and progesterone play such a big role in your neurotransmitters. So think of your calming hormone like GABA. A lot of women report, I don't feel as calm as I used to. I'm having a lot more anxiety. I can't fall asleep or stay asleep. Right. The bonding and connection hormone, oxytocin. We don't feel as connected. We don't want to do as many group things. We're not like into it with our friends or our partner like we used to. Okay. Even dopamine, serotonin, these big neurotransmitters that play with our mood. Yeah. I have so many women that say, I don't know what happened. My depression is now worse. My anxiety is now worse. I feel blah, Carrie. Like, I just don't want to, Carrie. Or they go the opposite way. They're like, I'm angry, Carrie. Right? Like, I'm ready to fight. And what happened to me? And it's this shift in hormones. Now, those are the common things you'll hear.
Okay.
But there's over 100 symptoms that can be related. Everything from itchy ears, like random stuff that you don't even think of. The change in hormones changes, you know, your earwax and can make your ears itchier. Dryness, dry skin, dry joints, dry eyes, dry mouth, dry vagina, dry scalp. Hair changes. I've had women tell me my hair is getting thinner. I've had women tell me my hair went from straight to curly or curly to straight. Because the shift in hormones can shift our hair follicle. They're like, what is happening? I'm like, I know. I know. And so by understanding, because again, we often blame ourselves. Well, there must be something I'm not doing, or there must be something going around, or it must be because I have a lot of stress right now. When in fact, our entire internal system is shifting because those hormones, estradiol and progesterone, which is our two big ones, that come out every cycle, touch every single system in our body. Everyone, everything, our cardiovascular heart system, our brains, so neurological, our musculoskeletal, you know, our mood, so neuro, skin, everything, immune system. I have women that say my Hashimoto's was under control and all of a sudden it's not. And I didn't change anything. I'm like, you didn't. Not intentionally. But the hormones shifted and therefore it affected your immune system. Right. And so it can be very frustrating for women. However, thank goodness, there is a lot we can do and a lot more education is coming out on it. So again, we missed out on the education of puberty. Let's get it now. Let's get it in perimenopause.
Right. Exactly. Oh my gosh. I had no idea that there was over 100. That's so
over
wild.
100. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think about something like, PCOS, which can cause, you know, missing periods or irregular cycles. So that one might be tricky for those of us who have.
What's interesting, though, is PCOS, and I've heard this time and time again, and you might have as well, PCOS women, when you become perimenopausal, and you're in the menopause, I hear a lot of PCOS women say, I feel the most regular or the most typical or expected or normal than I had my whole life.
Wow.
Because of the shift in hormones, they finally feel the same across the playing field with everybody else.
Yes.
And over, I have PCOS women in their 40s go, oh, this is how, like, oh, okay, I got it. And I'm like, oh, yes, because your hormones are going to drop down too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just because you were told you diagnosed with PCOS in your 20s and you've been really working hard on it these last two decades, you will also go through perimenopause. And therefore, your hormones will drop down in menopause and you will suddenly feel like you're supposed to with everyone else who doesn't have PCOS.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah. And I'm curious to see what happens to myself personally. Stay tuned.
Yeah. Yes, stay tuned.
what about, we talked a little bit about kind of how peri and menopause is kind of reversing out of puberty. Let's talk about the connection between our gut microbiome and our hormones and our personality, our mental health, how all of these are connected and how they might change along with something like, you know, going through menopause.
We are more microbe than we are human. So hopefully everybody woke up this morning and thanked their microbiome. All of them. We have them on our skin and our nose and sinuses and our vagina and the GI tract, of course, and our scalp, all the things. So we are more microbe than we are human. It's something like, it's in the 50s. So not much more, like more than I think people might be comfortable with. And our microbes do a lot for us. Hopefully they are working in our favor.
Yes.
And in our GI tract, so in our intestines, they do help us make certain vitamins, like our fat-soluble vitamin K, for example, or some B vitamins.
Mm-hmm.
They do help put out neurotransmitter hormones like serotonin, so they play a role in mood. They also help us with our breakdown of hormones, such as estrogen. Mm-hmm. So if your microbiome is actually not that healthy, you struggle with gas, bloating, constipation, diarrhea. You just kind of feel icky when you eat. You feel like you're not absorbing very well.
Mm-hmm.
And you struggle with a lot of mood or hormonal issues. It's definitely very related because the microbiome hopefully is helping you, but in that instance, it's not. And so you really feel it. And what happens is down in the gut in your microbiome, we have a communication nerve called the vagus nerve, and it goes straight up to the brain. So if the gut microbiome ain't happy, the brain ain't happy. So a lot of women will say, oh my gosh, not only do I have gas or bloating, constipation, diarrhea, whatever, malabsorption issues. And then I will ask them, how is your mood? How is your brain? How is your thinking? How are your hormones? You know, and they don't realize that it can go hand in hand. It's very tied together.
Yeah.
So we want to make sure our microbiome is healthy.
So true. What can someone do to boost their gut microbiome health and kind of promote healthier bacterial balance?
Yes. When we move into menopause, unfortunately, the drop in estradiol, so it's a normal decline, that's what pushes us into menopause, that loss of estradiol really changes our microbiome, like really can affect it for the worse. I don't know who designed us, Corey, I'm telling you.
Yeah, I'm like, wait, do men
I know. Can we file a complaint?
Like, yeah. I know. I want a refund.
Seriously. But the more we can do for the gut. So the big, big thing that I tell people is right now, I need you to start eating prebiotic foods. So we want that what we call our like resistant starch, your good fibers.
Okay.
And let's help feed and, you know, get the good microbes in there to proliferate and to grow up and to do their thing.
Right.
The second thing I want you to do is I want you to start avoiding the foods that you know are a problem. So if you absolutely know you're allergic to dairy, like you just know every time you have ice cream, it's a hot mess, but you do it anyway because you love ice cream.
Yeah.
Stop doing that to yourself right now. You're going through this transition. It's only going to make it worse. And I know that can be hard for people who are like, but Akiri, I love ice cream. I'm like, I know, but you're really causing a lot of inflammation and that's not helping.
Right.
So the third thing then is, believe it or not, oddly enough, the types of food that you eat. So I was talking with the microbiologist, Kiran Krishnan, of Megaspore, and he said, you know, all of these herbicides, pesticides, food stabilizers, and heavily packaged foods, will kill the microbiome. Like, that's their job. Their job is to kill bugs, and you are more than 50% bugs. Oh. So just be aware, if you are surrounding yourself with herbicides and pesticides, you're routinely eating food that are heavily sprayed, are very packaged, and so they have very long shelf lives because of the stabilizers in there that are meant to kill other bugs, they will affect your microbiome. But what I didn't know is when these chemicals and things get approved through the FDA, that they're looking to make sure it doesn't kill a cell and therefore kill a person, but they don't look at its effect on the microbiome.
Right.
So when you hear the news stories or you hear experts say, oh, it's perfectly safe, it's not going to kill you, Karen was like, of course, you know, like, well, but it is potentially drastically affecting the microbiome, and that's not getting tested. And I thought, man, that's such a good thing to know. So just something to keep in mind. Right. But you won't die. Yes. But your microbiome will be like livid with you. So
don't be careful
with that
bacteria.
Right. We've got some problems.
Yeah.
And then the last thing is, you know, is diversity in diet. Because if you just routinely eat the same thing every day, that's going to impact your microbiome. And your microbiome likes a little bit of diversity. And so, you know, every couple of days, throw in something cool and good and different. And when you hear, you know, eat the rainbow, you hear the quote, eat the rainbow. We mean it literally. We want you to diversity in your fibers. We want diversity in your meats or protein, whatever you do. We want diversity in your veggies. We want diversity in your grains if you eat them. Just the people who do the exact same thing every day, day in and day out.
Right.
In some cases, I understand if you're doing it for a therapy, for example, you're trying to eradicate something or it's part of a program. But for the average person, throw in a little diversity here and there, and that helps shift and move and strengthen the microbiome. So even just those things can be really helpful. Now, I get asked, what about probiotics? Carrie, do you like probiotics? I do like probiotics, sure. You can do a probiotic if you want to, but obviously there are hundreds, if not thousands, of probiotics out there, and they're not all created equal. And you may actually want to seek somebody who can help you with your gut microbiome. Now, and that's just what you can do every day. Obviously, there's a lot of additional, like you can do testing.
Yeah.
We can see what's going on in part of your microbiome. We can see if the good gut bugs versus the maybe the bugs that we don't really want in there, or candida or worms or, you know, things like that. We can look at, evaluate GI inflammation. There's a number of other things we can evaluate through stool testing. So you may need to poop in a cup for science, but it could help.
Nice. Yes. Yeah, I've done it.
Yeah.
Not the most glamorous test, but highly effective.
There's no way around it. PCOS is complex and multifaceted. What we know about it, including how best to treat it, is constantly changing. That's why I've dedicated my life's work to helping women put their PCOS into remission. Inside my signature program, the PCOS Boss Academy, women lose weight permanently without restriction and master their most stubborn PCOS symptoms. If you're looking to get pregnant or want to be a mom in the future, my ultra successful Get Pregnant with PCOS program supports moms-to-be every step of the way in conquering PCOS symptoms and bringing home the baby of their dreams. Plus, there's an additional weight loss mode to check into. These are all of the science-backed nutrition and lifestyle tweaks you need to improve your PCOS and change your life from a qualified healthcare provider and leading PCOS expert in the field. Ultimately, we are in control of our PCOS, and I would love to work with you inside one of my upcoming programs so you can step into the best version of yourself and start feeling like you again.
Okay, I'm throwing a curveball really fast just because I wanted to ask this before. We all hear about weight gain once we hit menopause. Is there a physiological basis behind that?
Yes. Okay.
Just clear that up. So,
We become, now here's what's interesting with PCOS, because women with PCOS are already experiencing this.
Yes.
But if you don't have PCOS, what happens when you get into perimenopause, especially in the later part, mid to later part of perimenopause, so your progesterone tends to drop down first.
Okay.
Your estradiol tends to drop down second, but your testosterone doesn't yet.
Hmm.
So if you don't have PCOS and you're not used to being more testosterone dominant, you become more testosterone dominant. Your estradiol starts to drop. And now testosterone, like from a ratio standpoint, is higher, so to speak.
Right.
And so your cells around the middle, that spare tire area, your visceral fat go, oh my gosh, that's a lot of androgens. And it shifts the way, one, where we deposit fat. So we go from an apple shape, or excuse me, a pear shape to an apple shape, right? We become more androgenic.
Right.
Two, that loss of estradiol, that drop in estradiol, affects the way our cell metabolizes. So we think of metabolism as like, oh, my metabolism's slow, I gain weight.
Right.
But really, cellular metabolism is how you take the food you eat and the supplements you swallow and turn it into energy. How efficient is the factory, your mitochondria, in your cell? And as we lose that estradiol, we become less efficient at breaking down and burning what are called fatty acids. And so because we don't do that as well, the body says, well, I got to store these somewhere. Right. And it sticks it in the visceral fat in the middle around our organs. And on top of that, when we have the drop in estradiol and progesterone, we become more insulin resistant. So this means our glucose, we eat, we think we're eating the foods we've eaten all the time since our 20s and 30s and maybe early 40s. And it's just been fine with our glucose. And then we get into perimenopause and we don't have the ability like we used to get that glucose into the cell to be used as energy. So then what do? You tend to gain weight as a result of being insulin resistant. And then on top of that, oftentimes women in their 40s and 50s are in the peak of everything, the peak of motherhood, the peak of company running, the peak of life. Their parents are getting older, maybe the peak of marriage, and it can be really stressful.
Right.
So they're dealing with a lot of stress.
Yeah.
On top of a shifting physiology, biology in their body, which is also stressful. So women will say, Carrie, I could manage this in my 30s. Why can't I manage this in my 40s? I'm like, because literally your inside is also shifting. You're changing. Whereas you had that platform, that scaffolding through your 20s and 30s to support you, hopefully, once you hit your 40s and 50s, the scaffolding is changing and it adds extra pressure. So when you add all those together, I believe I've read the average woman gains 12 to 15 pounds as they get close or into menopause.
Okay.
Obviously, there are women who gain more and some that are gained less. Now, understanding all that is not a weight gain, you know, death sentence, because thankfully they're listening to people like you, they're listening to people like me, and hopefully they're understanding like, oh, I'm changing, so things have to change. I really need to focus on the glucose insulin.
Yes.
I really need to focus on the stress. I really need to focus on this, the fiber and the diet part and the exercise, the weightlifting, the movement, and all of these attainable things to help make this shift better. And on top of it, when it's time for hormones, it's time for hormones. If you're a good fit, let's help replace it.
Yes. Yeah. I'd love to talk about that too, because that obviously is a hot topic, you know, whenever
we're
talking about perimenopause. What is that? What's your take on it?
Well, when we talk about hormones, we talk about bioidentical hormones. We're talking about hormones that look like the hormones in your body. And we have a lot of them. If you are type 1 diabetic, you're taking insulin. That's bioidentical hormone. If you are on a thyroid medication, that's bioidentical. You know, if you're on a T4 or T3, you know, that's a hormone replacement. And so when people first hear hormone replacement, they freak out. I'm like, oh, no. We have a lot out there.
Yes.
What usually people narrow in on, of course, as we get into menopause is estrogen. Because we've all been taught for the last 20 years, thanks, unfortunately, to the Women's Health Initiative study, is that estrogen causes breast cancer. And oh my goodness, I am so proud of all the researchers that have come so far in that 20 years to say, no, estrogen does not cause breast cancer.
Yes.
There was a lot wrong.
Yes.
In that study, and as a result of that study, and how they came out to the world with that study, which is a whole several books later and topic itself. But I'm really glad to see now more and more researchers going, actually, estradiol is not what's causing breast cancer. That's not it. And so I'm hoping women hear this, understand this, and realize that's very outdated information. Unfortunately, as with anything in any medical field,
Right.
It's like turning a cruise ship to get that information to change. So people will say, well, my pharmacy, the handout says estrogen causes cancer or progesterone causes cancer. I'm like, well, it's going to take a whole crew to turn that cruise ship to get them caught up with latest literature, unfortunately. So I understand it sounds scary when you go to your pharmacist or maybe talk to a doctor whose expertise is not in hormones and they're quoting old data.
Right.
But especially in the last 5 to 10 years, we have learned a lot about estrogen, and that's not the issue. Now, when people ask me what is the issue? Mm-hmm. One of the big things I do want everyone at any age, a lot of the chemicals, the endocrine disrupting chemicals mm-hmm. play a big role. Our parabens, our phthalates, things that act like estrogen,
right.
But they're fake and they kind of mess up the system. These are getting studied more and more, and I'm so grateful for that. The plastics, the fragrances, et cetera.
Yeah.
Genetics, there's a lot of, even though genetics, like we think of BRCA, which is the main breast cancer gene that we think of a lot, but we have so many more genetics, like we're so more aware of, like our detoxification genetics, our methylation genetics. I did a genetic test and it talked about my estrogen receptor genetics. I'm like, oh, that's so helpful to know as somebody going into menopause, just understanding that deeper information.
Exactly.
And so I tell everyone cancer is complicated. And then you layer on top of it infections, inflammation, mold, candida, viruses, et cetera. And, your poor immune system is dealing with a lot. So every day, I mean, it's just inundated. Yeah. And so to single-handedly blame estrogen, I'm like, ooh, no, it's not a single-handed thing.
Right.
I wish it were that easy. It's not.
I know. Exactly. Yeah. It's definitely multifactorial. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to some of these bioidenticals, so that's kind of, we've cleared up that myth. Is that something that somebody can explore with their primary care provider, or if they're looking into some, mm-hmm. what do they do, first of all? let's backtrack here. How can they be helpful? Someone in either, I don't know if they're helpful for just menopause or also someone kind of transitioning into the perimenopause. Why can't I say that word? Menopause. Thank you. It is Friday afternoon. Okay.
Yeah, it is very helpful for women transitioning to perimenopause and in menopause, yes. And there are various hormones we can choose from. Progesterone, testosterone, DHEA, estrogens, estradiol. So if you're listening to this and you're like, I have no idea what those are. So progesterone is our calming, soothing, relaxing hormone. Mm-hmm. Testosterone, of course, is typically considered, that's a male hormone. We have it too. It's important for our mood and our libido and our bone and different things. DHEA is an adrenal hormone, so it helps with energy. It's also, we call it a pro-hormone. It can turn into other hormones, which is helpful. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, estrogen, the main one we talk about a lot being estradiol.
Okay.
So when often women come in and they still get their period, but they're not producing progesterone like they used to, so they can't sleep, they're feeling more anxious, they're not calm.
Okay.
Oftentimes, progesterone is where they tend to start. And then as their estradiol starts to drop down, they're like, oh my gosh, I'm having hot flashes and night sweats and skipped periods and vaginal dryness and everything hurts. And, I'm not feeling good. Then once I start to hear that, then we can add in, they're a good candidate for it, estradiol. And of course, to DHEA, testosterone, even there's another hormone called pregnenolone. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of options for women, which is what I love. I love being able to tell women, oh my gosh, don't despair. There's a lot of options. Now, as far as where can you go? Some primary care, some OBGYN are trained in it. The estrogen and the progesterone are, you can get them at a pharmacy.
Okay.
The estradiol patches are body identical. They're what we call menopausal hormone replacement.
Okay.
And so your typical, CVS or Walgreens or Costco or wherever you go, they have them.
Awesome.
And same for the progesterone.
Okay.
The progesterone is called Prometrium.
Mm.
Just be aware, it does have peanut oil in it. If you're allergic to peanuts, we have to go a different
way. Okay.
So 50-50 though on if your primary care or OBGYN understands it. And it's nothing against them if it's just not their area of expertise.
Sure.
If your OBGYN really truly focuses on the OB part, they're probably not that focused on the menopause part of life.
Sure.
And it's okay to find somebody else who understands it better and can help. Now, what I don't want women to feel stuck if they do go to their primary care OBGYN and it's not their focus, or they say, no, let's try an antidepressant, or no, you know, hormones cause cancer. They just maybe aren't up on the latest information. And again, it is okay to find somebody who truly focuses on hormones and can help them versus blowing it off. Right. I just recently heard on Diary of a CEO, another, of course, popular podcast, a well-known menopause OBGYN expert telling the host it'd be the equivalent of his testicles shriveling up and dying. And if that happened, would medicine just say, oh, good luck, good luck, or here, go to therapy, just try, you know, try a counselor? Of course not. They would immediately put him on testosterone and support him every way which possible.
Yes.
And I love that analogy, because we get minimized a lot when it's there's so much research out there of the effects, the positive effects that hormones can have on our body. And we're going to spend a third to a half of our life in menopause. So let's do it gracefully.
Oh, exactly.
Let's thrive. Yeah.
I love that there's options. And so can someone do that on their own, or would you recommend they go through a provider, whether that is their OBGYN or, you know, PCP, or someone, you know, a naturopathic doctor, like, or can they just do that on their own?
So the only thing over the counter, just so everyone's aware, you can get progesterone cream over the counter and some other progesterone forms. I believe there's progesterone drops. And you can get DHEA over the counter. You cannot, you can't get testosterone. Testosterone's considered controlled, so you can't get that over the counter.
Right.
And in theory, estrogens are not over the counter, but I do know a couple companies that are seen pushing, you know, sort of what can be out there, or is topical okay?
Okay.
And I believe they're, you know, trying to figure out what the FDA would a little bit of topical estrogen be okay. However, I want people to have a personalized approach. I definitely would hate for them to just go to the nearest, you know, Whole Foods, pick up progesterone, slather it all over, and unfortunately do worse to their health than any good. You know, they may be like, oh, that, you know, that didn't work. Carrie and Corey were wrong. It's like, well,
yeah.
Like anything, we would prefer you get some guidance on this. These are hormones. However, I do tell you what's over the counter, because if you go to the store, check Amazon, you will see it.
Okay. This is a different dose than birth control, the estrogen and the, I say estrogen and progesterone, but you know what I mean? Like a hormonal contraceptive. Okay.
So yeah. Small. Obviously
it's a different type.
Formulation completely. So the estrogen and progesterone and birth control are actually not, they're synthetic. They're progestin is what we call it, and the ethanol estradiol. So it's not the same. Now, many OBGYNs, my own OBGYN years ago said, I just prescribed the birth control pill. And I said, but why? Why when we have body identical replacement therapy out there that's suited for women going through this? And she was like, oh, it's just easier. I was like, oof, okay. I'm not going to argue in my appointment, but.
I wonder how many just prescribe, you know, birth control. Like
a lot. Just judging by the comments and DMs, I have a lot of women that say, I was offered an antidepressant, the birth control pill.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I love this education, to get out there. Oh, no. I mean, you can, but there, I prefer you go a different route.
Yeah, exactly.
For the body.
Okay. Thank you for clearing all that up. It's just fascinating. I know we could do a whole podcast on bioidenticals. It's just fascinating. It's so cool.
Yes.
Okay. We'll wrap up here with a couple last questions. If someone is experiencing any types of, you know, just these changes we've talked about, and kind of thinking, is this perimenopause? Are there specific labs they could ask for just to check out what's happening? And what would you say just like a few, you know, basic ones are that somebody can ask their doctor for?
To diagnose perimenopause or menopause, there's no lab test. So just like we diagnose diabetes with a lab test, we diagnose hypothyroidism with a thyroid lab test.
Yeah.
We don't diagnose perimenopause and menopause. Menopause, like I said, 12 months, no cycle, appropriate age. And I say appropriate age because, of course, if you're PCOS and you haven't had a cycle, and you're in your 20s, you're not menopausal. I want to make sure I'm clear. It's appropriate age. And in perimenopause, it's, you know, it's, again, sort of age specific and symptoms. However, as I said, it affects every system. So I do love women to get lab work done when they are perimenopausal at the earliest, at the latest, because things start to shift. Keep an eye on it. So you may be listening to this thinking, Carrie, my thyroid was normal last year, but you're a lot more symptomatic this year. I want you to get lab work. And by lab work, I mean, you know, go get your basic stuff, your red and white blood cells called a CBC. Go get a metabolic panel. Mm-hmm. Check that glucose. Ask if you can add an insulin because you become more insulin resistant. Yes. Let's try to catch it and be proactive about it before it goes up. Yes. Check those lipids, your cholesterol, your triglycerides. See if you can add in some fancy cooler markers. One is called an ApoB, APO or apolipoprotein B. Mm-hmm. Your practitioner should know what it is. It should be easy to add to a lab order. It's not a weird, crazy test. It's a really good indicator for heart disease. And I think all women should really check that. I think you should check your thyroid again. Because yeah. even if it was good last year, or right. if you're struggling with Hashimoto's or hypothyroid or even Graves, mm-hmm. you're symptomatic more this year, more hot flashes, more night sweats, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I don't want you to miss that. I want to get right on top of your thyroid now. Yes. And that's just a few. I think, again, it depends on the woman, what they're concerned with. But some of those basic lab markers, don't sleep on them. Definitely get them checked out again. Be right. proactive about it.
Okay. I love that. Thank you. Yeah. And wrapping up here, last question. I love to do myth busting on this podcast because yes. there's just so much bullshit out there. And I love to clear the air for listeners. One of the, you know, something that you hear a lot when it comes to menopause, there's a couple that I've heard, but if there's like top three myths that you can think of that you have to fight against when it comes to menopause, what are those?
Yes.
The
top three. Okay. The first one is there's nothing you can do. I have literally had doctors fight me on it and say, there's nothing you can do. You're going to go through it. You know, best of luck, which is true. We can't stop it. You're going to go through menopause, perimenopause and menopause. However, as you've heard on this whole podcast, there is so much, and we didn't even scratch the surface. There is so much you can do. And you know, if you've already been following Corey with everything in her page with PCOS, mm-hmm. everything with diet and movement and stress and lifestyle and community and all the things, if you haven't been doing it, you're going to continue or ramp it up in mm-hmm. perimenopause. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot you can do. That's number one. Yeah. Number two is that the weight gain is inevitable. So, you know, best of luck. And there's right. nothing we can do about that. I'm like, well, we understand why.
Yeah.
Weight gain happens. So again, like, let's be proactive. Let's work on our gut. Let's reduce inflammation. Let's actively work to reduce insulin resistance. There's supplements and diet and weightlifting. Like, let's get that movement dialed in. Let's switch from cardio bunnies to weightlifting. Mm. Let's work on our stress management. You know, there's a lot that goes into that. Let's help our mitochondria mm-hmm. function better. Let's help those little factories power out better. And the third myth, of course, we've talked about the most is, you know, oh, well, those hormones cause cancer. Estrogen causes cancer. And mm-hmm. I hope everyone is aware that if you've ever, unfortunately, had cancer yourself or had anyone close to you with any kind of cancer, you know, cancer is complicated. It's very complicated and it's not single-handedly one thing. So I don't want you to fear like, oh my gosh, it's the one cause of breast cancer. Yes. Therefore, I'm never going to take it. Meanwhile, your heart disease is going up. Your risk for diabetes is going up. Your brain function is going down. Your joints are getting old and creaky. Your skin is not what it used to be. You know, like, your mood is going to hell. Your quality of living, just be really mindful. I understand the fear out there 100%, but at the same time, it's heart disease. It's cardiovascular disease. That's the number one killer of men and women, everybody. It's not breast cancer. That's not the number one killer. And there's still a lot we can do to be proactive to help our body prevent against cancer. And so the big takeaway I want everyone to have is there's a lot you can do. And it can feel overwhelming. Sure. Baby steps, one thing at a time.
Yes.
But just like if you're listening with PCOS and, you know, it was probably overwhelming at first, and then, you know, you went through Corey's program and you followed everything, and you're like, oh, I can do this. Finally, it's manageable. It's mm-hmm. the same in perimenopause and menopause. Like, you're mm-hmm. just going to, one thing at a time, dial in, work through the changes, and coming out thriving like a star.
Feel so empowered. I'm really, I need to start thinking about this because I will be there before I know it. And yeah, I want to learn as much as I can. I don't want to be that passive, what's happening to me and why, you know. I want to arm myself with all the information that I could have, which leads me to my next question, which is how can listeners find you? How do you, if you work with clients or if you have different resources or programs, let us know how we can find you, where we can learn more from you, all that jazz.
Absolutely. Website and Instagram are probably the top two. Okay. So drcarriejones.com. And as you said in the beginning, Instagram, I'm at dr.carriejones. So that's probably the two places I have the most. I am not currently seeing clients one-on-one. I'm working and will be working a lot more in 2024 with a group called nutritiondynamic.com. And we are creating a menopause course class thing. So we're in the early stages. Stay tuned. But that's where I will be focusing a lot more mid to late 2024. So, but you'll see everything on drcarriejones.com.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much, Dr. Jones. I really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you for having me. I love talking about this.
All right.
If you like this episode, don't forget to review my podcast on Apple Podcasts. It's what keeps me running. Thanks for listening to the Imperfect PCOS Podcast.